Serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Our guest today, Mike Martinez of Fort Collins, Colorado. He served on a machine gun crew attached to the 82nd Airborne Division in Europe, highlighted by the month he spent battling brutal winter conditions and a desperate enemy in the infamous Battle of the Bulge. That stretched from mid-December 1944 well into January 1945.
Maybe you don't know what day is what and if it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Sunday, but did you know it was Christmas? And how did that Christmas of 44 happen for you?
Oh, it was Christmas of 44. Yes, we did, because it let us know. But guess what we had? We had sea rations for dinner that day, and it was great. Oh, I guess we had to be happy that at least we got to eat dinner. That was a very rough day. Them Germans made sure we didn't celebrate, I guess, because they come at us from, it seemed like, all directions. And month of December was very rough, for sure. You know, they started hitting us real rough about the 15th. And we'd been at them before, but I think it started about the 15th. It started to get a little rougher, or we thought it was a little rougher. Maybe we were more tired. I don't know. Did we run from the bullets, or did we hide from the bullets, or how come we managed to survive that? I do not know, because they were there, and they were willing to kill us. A few of us survived, but a lot of us died. A lot of us are still laying there.
And when it comes to Christmas, not that it sounds like you had much time to think about anything other than, like you say, surviving, but did that thought come to your mind? I wonder what's happening back home in Colorado, what my family's doing right now for Christmas?
Actually, we didn't have much time to think about it. You know, we were too busy trying to save our skin. It was something else.
What about when the Battle of the Bulge finally ended? Was that a relief? Did you guys even realize it? Were you too exhausted to know the difference? What do you remember about that?
Well, in a way, yes, we knew the Battle of the Bulge was over, but in a way, no, because we had a rough road to hoe till we got to Munich. We went all the way down through there, and we got up to Munich, and then it got long. By the time we got to Munich, the war, you could say the war was over. Then is when 82nd and I, we split up. My group split up from the 82nd, was in Munich, and they went into Berlin. We went to Austria. But the war was over once we hit Munich, and they lost, and we won. And that's what made it so great, that we finally won, and I was ready to come home, and I had enough points that I was in the first bunch that come. So I was one of the early birds to come home, I guess you could state it that way.
Before you came home, I know a lot of guys that were in and around Munich in that time period made it past the Dachau concentration camp. Is that something that you experienced?
The Dachau, no, I did not make that one, but I made another. We liberated another woman's detention center. And then poor women, it was cold when we got there. We hit the concentration camp. We liberated, and we could not stop. We had to go right on through. We had another crew behind us to take care of them. They were practically naked. One thing you notice, they didn't have no hair at all, not even on their heads, that they were ready for the gas chamber. And then women were very happy that we to see us come in. It was something else to see a bunch of American GIs come in and liberate them. Because, I mean, they had older people and younger people. They had them all in there, and it was nothing but women in that camp.
And you remember it now, and you've told this story a few times. But in 1945, did you have any idea that anything like this could even exist, that people could be living in those kind of conditions?
No. The conditions were something else. How they lived, you know.
I mean, that had to be a shock to you to see that.
Oh, well, we knew the what was going on. We'd heard about it, you know. Mm. But we did not know we was going to liberate the camp when we did. At least the lower ranks of the Army didn't, but the officers probably did. Yeah. That was for sure. And we had quite a time. And crossing them rivers over there was another thing that we had to, you know, you had to be awful careful, because they were very tough to cross. I mean, they're not little rivers, they're big rivers.
So how would you guys do it?
We had to have boats to cross, because they're about a mile wide, and how deep they are is God only knows. Well, they probably know, but I never did know, but they were pretty deep.
They take a few of you in a boat at a time at night, or what?
Yes, or whenever they thought of, you know, Patton, whenever he got the crazy idea we had to go, we went.
Speaking of old blood and guts, and you made reference to him earlier, Did you ever see him? Were you ever in a spot where he came through with those famous pearl-handled pistols?
You know, when I hit France, that was the first guy I met.
What?
Person to person, yes. Well, I got out there, and I was standing with mud clear up to my knees almost, and the first thing he said, you better shine them shoes and get a shave. At the time, I don't remember if I was old enough to shave or not, but them shoes could have never been shined and done any good. But man, he jumped on me real rough about me not shining my shoes. I'll never forget that. That one I'll never forget, old blood and guts. But he was one of the first officers I met over there.
I could see how that would stick with you. You get done with the Bulge, you cross the Rhine, you cross the Elbe, you get to Munich. You said you liberated that concentration camp. And here, this whole time in the war, you've been firing at the enemy, and you know that there are guys that are dying on the other side of that machine gun. But to have that chance to liberate a camp and see these women who were so close to death, I mean, who knows how close to death, and you helped save their lives. What did that feel like to know that you helped save their lives?
Well, you know, we never thought about it really that way, but we knew we did. We were thankful that we did. And like I said, we wasn't able to stop. We had to keep on going because we had to keep the Germans moving or they would. We were afraid if they ever got a foothold, things would start getting real rough. Our group kept on pushing the best we could. And then we had a group behind us to come up and to help them get situated, you know, take baths and get clothes or whatever they did. We couldn't stop and visit with them at all. We just had to keep on going, which I'm thankful we did that. Or we'd have had some crazy thoughts about that, I guess, you know, about remembering, feeling sorry for them mainly. Because they were in a bad shape. You could tell they were. I doubt it that they'd been fed for a day or two.
And you've told us about some of the close calls from bombs going off, from your own planes bombing you to the German planes bombing you, the one that knocked you off your feet and really had you out of sorts for quite a while, the bullets that are hitting guys next to you but not you. And I don't want to put words in your mouth because a lot of people feel a different way. Some guys say, hey, I was just lucky that bullet didn't have my name on it. Some guys said, hey, there was definitely somebody looking out for me and making sure I came home. Where do you fit? I'm sure you've thought about that a time or two over the years. What do you think about the fact that you went through everything you did and you still made it home?
You know, that makes you wonder, you know. Now, was a good Lord up above taking care of me? Or is it just that the Germans forgot to put my name on that bullet? That one is very hard and makes you wonder just how in the world did you survive that? Because it was a very rough road to hoe, you know, to see the guy. A lot of times, the guy on your left was died, the guy on your right died, and here you were, standing out in front in the middle and watching them come after you. What saved your bacon? I do not know. The good old boy up above, I guess, is the only conclusion we can come to. He took good care of us.
And maybe this is a dumb question, but I've got to ask it. Were you scared?
Well, I guess the answer is going to have to be yes. But we were so scared we didn't know we were scared because I don't know. Yes, we were scared. Very scared, I would imagine. But like I said, we don't really know why or what. Now, I do know that for Christmas of 44, I did cry for my mommy because we didn't have a Christmas dinner. I guess maybe that's the reason I had to cry for her. But that was the way it went. Outside of that, I mean to tell you, it was just, I guess, mainly listening to old blood and guts giving instructions. And I mean to tell you, he had a lot of instructions, but you'd never seen him out there holding your hand.
Well, speaking of hands and fingers and toes and a nose and your ears, so many guys that went through the Battle of the Bulge, especially as long as you did, had frostbite, had lingering injuries from exposure. Did you ever deal with anything like that?
Yes, I dealt with frost on my toes, that's for sure. See, what we did a lot, maybe because I was a country boy, I don't know, but I learned you had to wrap something on your feet to kind of help them out. And we went out there and looked for dead Americans and stole their blankets from them. Well, we didn't steal them because they were dead. And we cut them up and wrapped them around our feet in order to keep our feet from freezing. And I think I started that and everybody else followed. And that was great, you know. A lot of guys survived that way. But a lot of guys did freeze their feet. It was something else, as cold as it was. Because we didn't have no overshoes. I guess they were not invented or something. The Army never furnished. See, we were kind of unprepared for cold weather like that when we went over there. We didn't have any good winter clothes per se.
So you do come home, get into New York City. Did you sail past the statue?
Yes, we did. We definitely did. But then they let us off there, and We paraded down Broadway and had a happy time.
So what was that like to get home and see your family again?
Oh, it was something else. It was more or less unbelievable. Like I said, communications is not like they are today. They knew I was coming home, but they didn't know when. And I surprised the daylights out of...
You still remember that look on your mom's face?
Oh, you bet I do. She was something else, and she had to give me a big old bear hug, and you know how the moms are. A mom really loves you, that's for sure.
And you made reference earlier, you became a broadcast engineer. You used the GI Bill and went to college. And you worked at TV stations or radio stations or what?
Radio stations. I worked as chief engineer for radio stations. There was one in Durango, one in Cortez, and one in Blanding that I worked with, and there was one in New Mexico.
I'm sure there's a lot that I'm leaving out that you could tell us a lot of stories, but I want to make sure I ask you about Honor Flight, because you went to Washington, D.C. with Northern Colorado Honor Flight, got to see the World War II Memorial with all those gold stars representing 406,000 Americans who didn't come home. So many of them killed at the Battle of the Bulge, where you somehow survived. What was that like for you to go to that memorial?
Oh, it was something else. Kind of unbelievable, you know, what they've done. Yes, we had quite a time. I enjoyed going back there to see it. First, I didn't want to go, but I'm glad I did. And they'd done a great job.
Why didn't you want to go?
Because I was afraid of the memories it'd bring. But I did want to go to see what they'd done, you know. And it does bring memories. Anytime you mention them battles, memories do come alive. That's what you want to stay from. It is over with. You want to forget it. And if we don't watch it, we're liable to have one here. But we hope not. We hope everything stays like it is right now. A war is not a picnic. A war means the disasters you see during a war are something else.
When you were at that World War II memorial and looking at everything there, I'm sure you saw the pillar with Colorado etched on it. You saw that section that is dedicated specifically to the Battle of the Bulge, which you survived. And, of course, those gold stars. What did you think about while you were there?
I think that was a great honor that they placed on us, and I thought that was great. That's one thing I thought about, and I was glad that it was there. And it was great that I got to go there and visit it and see it, you know.
Did it make you feel that maybe people understand that what you did was pretty significant?
Some people, I'm going to put it this way, the majority of the people, yes, they've seen it, they understand, and they will honor it. And I'm glad of that. You know, the wars were made to win, and yes, we won them. Yes, we fought with everything we had, and I'm glad that we managed to survive all them wars. But we're going to run into one that we're not going to win one of these days, because we're just getting too well scattered, and then people's going to realize just what a war is, and a lot of people do not know what a war is. It's something to read about. That's the way they'd look at it. Or a TV movie. No, a war is not a thing you want to live in, that's for sure.
And I think what I hear you saying there, when you say we're too scattered, are you saying that America today is so divided that it wouldn't have what you guys had 70 years ago, which was a country united, and that's why you were able to win the war? Am I on the right track?
Yes, sir, that's exactly what I mean. Because this country's getting divided pretty well. Because look, we're not backing up our country.
What do you think of when you see the American flag?
I think it's a great honor to see the flag. That's another thing. That's a touchy situation. A lot of people do not honor it and they do not respect it.
What does it mean to you? What does it symbolize?
It symbolizes the freedom of our country and how we will support it. And we will support it with everything we got.
And you've done that. And I want to thank you for serving our country and thank you for telling us a little bit of your story. Is there something that you would say you're most proud of? Or most thankful for?
I guess most thankful for is that I went over there, helped our country survive, and the biggest thing is that I managed to come home. That's the thing that I'm mostly thankful for. And how I managed to do that, I do not know, because that would be a big mystery.
Well, you know, one of the good things about mysteries is they make us stop and think a little bit, and you've given us a lot to think about today. Mike Martinez of Fort Collins, Colorado. See what he looks like on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page or at hometownheroesradio.com, where you can also order that book by Brad Hoops that includes Mike's story and dozens more. Again, the title of that book, Reflections of Our Gentle Warriors. We're out of time for now, but I hope you'll join us again next time here on Hometown Heroes. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you once more that freedom is not free.